Hello, listeners. Welcome to Waves and Wonders, a podcast by the Central Coast State Parks Association, an environmental nonprofit in San Luis Obispo County, California. Waves and Wonders focuses on natural and cultural topics as they relate to the Central Coast. I'm James.
And I'm Gabby.
We are two Cal Poly students that love to explore the natural beauty in our own backyard. I am here today with some authors and contributors to the new book, Pismo Monarch Butterflies, Magic, Myths, and Mysteries. Thank you all for joining me today. I was thinking, could we just start this off with maybe going around? Y'all can introduce yourselves, maybe tell us what got you interested in monarch butterflies, as well as your role and contribution to the book.
Okay, I'll start. My name is Cheryl Powers, and I was a professional science teacher, biology educator for 44 years. When I retired and moved to the Pismo Beach area, I found the Monarch Butterfly Grove a delightful place and a wonderful place to continue my desire to share my knowledge about nature with the public. And I have been a volunteer at the Pismo Monarch Grove since 2011.
And I'm Peggy Burhan. I am also a docent at the Butterfly Grove along with Cheryl. And I got interested in the Monarch Butterfly Grove after working down there. The monarchs are just magical. When you're there and there are thousands of monarch butterflies flying around, it's just a really happy place. Most people there are really excited to learn more about the monarch butterflies, and they're just amazed about this phenomenon that there's so many butterflies in one location, and it's right here in Pismo Beach. And then the book just came out of that. People have a lot of questions, and we said, wow, people have the same questions over and over again. We should write a book about the Pismo Beach Monarch Grove and share what we know as docents. And then, of course, we did have a content expert in Francis Villablanca, who couldn't be on the podcast today, but he is a professor at Cal Poly. So we had backing from an expert too, but it's very grassroots book from docents that really just love butterflies.
And my name is Susan Gare, and I'm one of the editors. I did most of the technical editing and helped with the computerization of the ebook. I became interested in monarch butterflies when I moved here after teaching English for 28 years in Santa Ana College. I just went to the Grove and I said, I want to be here every day. And they said, why don't you volunteer? So I signed up and met these wonderful women, and we created this book, and the rest is going to be history.
Oh, that is so awesome. My next question, you guys kind of covered it. So what was this someone's idea originally, or was it just kind of a collective effort? You guys were all docents, all love butterflies, and just came up with the idea to write a book over time? Or what was that that process kind of like?
Well, actually, there was a publication called The Wanderer that had been written in the 80s and the 90s by Pismo docents. And so what we wanted to do is to do, we realized that there were a lot of things in that publication that really weren't true anymore, because there were so many new discoveries about monarchs that were not included in the book, in that publication. And so we wanted to do an update, and we also wanted to take advantage of new technology to really bring the story of the Pismo Grove alive for people by including more visuals and videos and links to videos that people could see, in addition to the most up-to-date research information.
And currently we are rewriting another update to that update to the new book, because it's so easy to just make the changes every year as the science changes. We can just update the book and it doesn't take all that long.
All right. So I guess we'll just kind of dive into some questions more about the Pismo Monarch Butterfly Grove, and just some basic questions about monarchs. So pretty broad, basic question, but it's pretty amazing that these, I don't know, hundreds of thousands, I assume millions of monarchs all know to take the same migration path and all travel kind of as one. Is it known how they have kind of figured this out or how they decide to do this?
Well, first of all, there are two different populations we talk about, the Western monarch butterfly and the Eastern monarch butterfly. And what we, our book is really about the Western monarchs, but we try to clarify to the public that they are in fact the same species of monarchs. And so the Eastern monarchs primarily go to the mountains of central Mexico to spend the winter. And the Western monarchs, most of them go to coastal California. So that's one major distinction. How they know where to go is one of the mysteries, of course, and one of the things that scientists have been working on, trying to unravel the secret of how they we know a lot about how they migrate, and how they find their way to the places, but there's still a tremendous amount that is still unknown. I mean, what is so special about our grove that when monarchs who are four or five generations removed from any monarchs that were ever there before, how do they know that this is going to be a safe place to spend the winter? And that's one of our great mysteries and magic of the place.
Yeah. And additionally, you mentioned, you know, they migrate together. I mean, they actually migrate and they wind up together. But for the most part, they're not like the painted ladies that you see, like just a big stream of them going across your backyard. You might see clusters of a few together. They might hang out together along the way. But for the most part, it is individual monarchs that are finding their way to Pismo Beach.
Interesting. Are there any, I know it's sort of a mystery. Are there any like sort of popular theories as to why they all end up in Pismo, or is it still pretty much a mystery?
Well, there are probably 400 sites along the coast that have had monarchs. Pismo tends to be one of the largest, and they find that there's similarities in the type of climate, the protection from trees, the fact that that weather, you know, is great and it's not going to freeze. But specifically that location, you know, I don't know. they're just on vacation in Pismo like a lot of other people.
I always tell people it's location, location, location. They have a view of the ocean. They have the breezes from the ocean. It's just a really nice place to be.
And it is a place that where clusters of monarchs have been documented since the 1940s.
Interesting.
And there is no, there's no historical record before that of monarchs in our part of coastal California. There were some monarchs that were noted in the early 1900s up in Pacific Grove, but the historical documentation of the Western monarchs is still has a lot of gaps.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, this next question, again, I assume it'll kind of follow the same theme of just like mystery, but I was just thinking about it, and I feel like the weather and climate's pretty, I want to say similar, like throughout Slo County. And it's so interesting that these butterflies aren't really spread out. It's just this one grove in Pismo. Is it something to do with the species of tree that are there? Or I assume this will be kind of a mystery, but do you guys have any theories as to why?
First, a clarification. We have the most, almost always, we have the most monarch butterflies at the Pismo Grove of any of the Western overwintering sites. Mm-hmm. However, in our county, in San Luis Obispo County, we had 24,000 monarchs in our grove this winter. But in San Luis Obispo County, there were 129,000. So there are other places in our county. It's just the Pismo Grove is the only public place for people to see the monarchs. And most of us in this writing team are also involved in actually counting the monarchs. And so we go to other places in the county twice a year on Thanksgiving and the first right after New Year's to count the monarchs. The monarchs at the Pismo Grove are actually counted by the state park right now. State park staff, but it's other trained volunteers that count the rest of the monarchs.
And I will say, in terms of the location, even though California is a great place and most of us, the winter is pretty good, it still will freeze. I live in Arroyo Grande, which is only about 10 miles from the coast, and we get a frost on occasion in many years. So if the butterflies experience freezing temperatures, then that could, you know, decimate them. So they do need to be near the coast or in a location where freezing is unlikely.
Interesting. You mentioned counting the butterflies. Where does this data ultimately get reported back to?
Peggy, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. The data is sent to Xerces Society, which is the Society for Conservation of Invertebrates, and they document the data. It's freely available on their website, all the history. You can look up every site and find out like how many butterflies were there if you're interested. But they keep that data and then they supply summaries on a, you know, every year. They keep the data, as Cheryl mentioned, for the Thanksgiving count and the New Year's count, and also for Mexico as well. There's a conglomerate that keeps track of the information from Mexico, but that can also be found on their website.
Mm-hmm. Right, and an important thing that the Xerces does is they have standardized the counting method. So throughout all of the coastal California sites, the counting is done exactly the same way. Whereas in Mexico, the counting of the millions of butterflies that are in Mexico is done by aerial surveys, mm-hmm. Because there are so many more and they haven't figured out any other way to estimate the population there. But we really literally sometimes count them one by one. Other times we are extrapolating from looking at a cluster and saying, well, here's how tightly packed they are. We're going to count this cluster by units of 10 and go from the bottom of the cluster up to the top. Two people have to count each cluster in order to record a value. And if you disagree a little bit, you simply record the average of the two counts.
And there's some great pictures in the book that actually demonstrates what Cheryl's talking about in terms of how we count them. And also some picture of the Oyamel fir trees with just covered with butterflies that you would experience if you were in Mexico. So there's some really great photography in the book as well that helps explain the story.
So you mentioned that they can be found in other places throughout Slo County. Are there any other, I mean, besides obviously the well-known Pismo Monarch Grove, are there any other areas you would suggest for folks on the Central Coast that are trying to see some monarch butterflies?
There's the other parks. There's four public locations where you can see the butterflies. One is Natural Bridges State Parks, and that's in Santa Cruz, and Pacific Grove in Monterey, and then Goleta has a site as well.
The Elvis Grove, yeah.
Many of the groves are on private property and aren't accessible to the public. And like Morro Bay Golf Course does have clusters of butterflies usually, but of course you have to have permission to go on the golf course, but they'll usually do a tour several times a year to take people out there to see them if they have some significant clusters. But as Susan mentioned, there are some really good locations that are open to the public.
Fiscalini Ranch out in Cambria, I think that's another one that is open to the public.
And you can see the list of names on the Xerces website too, if you look at mm-hmm. their charts. So you could look and see if there was a place near you. There's sites in Ventura, County, Los Angeles County, you know, farther down south as well, and farther north too.
Thank you so much. So how do human interactions affect butterflies and their migration patterns? Does all these humans like flocking and trying to view them, does that ever become a problem for the butterflies and affect their behavior and livelihood? Or how can people respectfully view these butterflies, I guess, is a better way of phrasing this question.
Well, I think almost a better question would be, what can humans do to help increase the butterfly population?
Mm-hmm.
And that would be for everybody to plant milkweed.
If you're 5 miles or more from the coast.
Correct.
So what we've seen a lot of visitors come in the butterfly grove, and they really don't seem to bother the butterflies. I mean, certainly we don't want people touching the butterflies. You have to be really careful because at certain times of the year, they'll land on the ground and you could accidentally step on them. So there are things that people can do to be conscious of that and be safe in the butterfly grove. And then, of course, just what we do, you know, we do affect the population of butterflies by if we're using pesticides, you know, herbicides kill plants, which sometimes is milkweed. Insecticides kill insect pests, but they also kill butterflies and caterpillars. So to the extent that people can not use those products, that really would help the butterflies.
Just getting down to last couple questions here. How do you think climate change will affect these migration patterns? Because it seems that the monarch butterfly migration is very temperature driven, and with changing temperatures and changing patterns, are there projections of how these migration patterns could change? And do you think in, say, 20 years that the Pismo Monarch Butterfly Grove will still be flourishing with monarchs?
Well, I'll say one thing for sure about, I think that there, with a warmer climate pattern, there will be more butterflies that will not migrate. We're seeing non-migratory populations of monarchs in Southern California. And it's warm there year round. There's plenty of milkweed now of different kinds, including the sometimes controversial tropical milkweed. And those monarchs really don't need to go anywhere for protection in the wintertime. That's also true of the monarchs in southern Florida. And along the Gulf Coast, there are more and more non-migratory populations of monarchs. But the ones that are coming from places where it freezes in the wintertime, if they're spending the spring, summer, and fall in places where there is a severe winter, they still need to find a place to overwinter. So I think we're going to continue to see a overwintering population. We certainly hope so. These suggestions from researchers that we heard from at a conference in January was that perhaps the migratory ones will be moving further north, that we'll have, and not so many, we won't see so many migratory monarchs in the more southern parts of the California coastline.
Mm-hmm. And I know Cal Poly, there were some researchers there that have done some work on this, modeling what would that look like and where would there be locations that would be beneficial to the monarchs. And they actually think, you know, in addition to moving north, they might actually move into the mountains. So there are some theories about what might happen, but I don't know if we know 100% certainty what will happen.
Cheryl, you mentioned the tropical milkweed. You said it was somewhat controversial. I was just wondering what was controversial about that plant.
Well, scientists, even in California, scientists disagree on whether or not it has ever been considered to be a native form of milkweed to California. Some scientists say yes, it's always been in Southern California. The controversy with tropical milkweed is it's found it throughout Central America, and it's found in Mexico, it's found in Florida, and in Southern California. There is a parasite that goes along with tropical milkweed called, whose nickname is OE, and I won't burden you with the scientific name. You can look it up in our book. That has a harmful effect on many of the butterflies that are feeding on, if there are too many, seems to be a problem if there are too many butterflies feeding on tropical milkweed. This OE parasite actually is harmful to some of the butterflies. A lot of people say, well, there are lots of other things that are harmful to monarch butterflies. Of all of the possible eggs that a monarch butterfly produces, which is averages about 400, the average survival rate of how many of those eggs under the best of all circumstances turn into butterflies is between 1 and 10%. So there are all kinds of things that happen, but the issue is in introducing yet another component to what we might consider the natural cycle for the monarch butterfly by moving the tropical milkweed to places where it had never grown before. Are we wiping out more monarchs that way? And so there is tropical milkweed in our county. There's tropical milkweed up in the Bay Area now that never would have existed there had people not gotten interested in trying to help monarch butterflies. So the question is, in trying to help them, are we doing more help or harm by putting tropical milkweed in places where it doesn't occur naturally? But if the climate changes and it gets warmer, well, then what's naturally? That's Peggy's the botanist and this issue.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think that is controversial. You know, there is a big push now to have people grow more native plants because native plants tend to attract native insects, and our native insects, you know, including monarch butterflies, you know, we feel is good for biodiversity. Still, sometimes that's controversial as well, but I think you're always on the safe side if you put the native plant that belonged in this area for the monarch butterfly and to make it available to them. So typically we focus on Asclepias fascicularis, which is narrow leaf milkweed. That's probably the most readily available milkweed, and it's probably the easiest to grow of the native milkweeds. As Susan was mentioning, you know, we would love to have more people grow milkweed. We don't think milkweed would have occurred or grown naturally along the coast where the butterflies overwinter. So if you are going to plant milkweed, it's important that you're planting it at least five miles away from the coast or from the overwintering sites, so that we don't encourage the monarchs to lay eggs at the wrong time of the year if they sense the milkweed near their overwintering sites. That's typically what we recommend.
However, there's milkweed out in the Channel Islands, and that flies in the face of that.
Right.
That whole idea.
So we don't know. There's a lot of unanswered questions. That's why some of it's myths and mysteries, because we find that there's new things we figure out every year. And maybe next year we'll be talking to you and we'll have new information on that.
Right.
Yeah, it seems like it's... Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, one thing I do want to mention, though, that we... all of us went to the Western Monarch Butterfly Conference that was held this year in January in our area. And at the conclusion of the conference, they asked the world's leading monarch experts, scientists that were there, do you think the monarch butterfly is going to become extinct? Should it be declared an endangered species? And this was a controversy that made a lot of headlines in recent years, especially with the decline in the population, both in the West and in Mexico. And the universal conclusion of those scientists is, no, we don't think the monarch butterfly is going to go extinct. Is the population threatened? by cutting down fir trees in Mexico? Is the population threatened potentially by, what's happening with climate change? The overwintering population may be threatened, but is the monarch butterfly as a species going to go extinct? Nobody thought it was going to go extinct. So therefore, they were not voting for it to be put on the endangered species list. That's still up in the air. It's been put on this, what's called the Red List, which is the international listing for endangered species. But our country has kind of tabled the whole thing and said, well, we're not really seeing right now that we want to put it on the endangered species. So,
What were kind of the factors that led these scientists to believe that the butterflies kind of crossed that threshold from being threatened and at risk to being actually at risk of extinction?
Well, the threatened simply means the populations that have once existed are declining, and at risk for extinction, endangered is the next level, and that is from a federal standpoint. We're supposed to take measures to protect the butterfly, and that would be, putting some regulations, more regulations on the use of pesticides on roadways, perhaps planting more milkweed, taking federal action to protect the butterfly. So I think in terms of the endangered species, it's just an action of whether or not there are federal laws that would be protecting the butterfly. And right now there aren't any, other than trying to educate the public about pesticides and plants, that nectar plants that will help butterflies and help insects in general, and the use of cutting down on any of the things that are harmful to all insects.
Reaching towards the end of my questions here, just wanted to maybe go around one more time and just maybe everyone share either their favorite part of writing the book, or maybe their favorite part of the book overall.
Well, I'll start with that. I mean, a lot of work went into this book, and I think it's great because it has so many wonderful pictures, and it really also tells a story and gives you a good understanding of the Pismo monarchs. There's a lot of misconceptions. So it really clarifies a lot of things. If people want to come down and see the monarchs, it's probably important to point out that they're there in the winter. So they're usually there October through February. Sometimes in March, there's a few hanging out. But that's, I think, my favorite part of the book, is that I can share a lot of what's going on in the book with the public, because it's a really interesting story, and people have been very positive about the reaction we've gotten from the book and for sharing the knowledge that we've gained as docents.
For me, being the technical editor and being the person behind the computer, I love that we now have QR codes in the book. And so they're very scannable. Before, in the print edition, we had the whole link, but now you can just scan with your phone a QR code and get videos, resources, more pictures, and other things that are available. And I just want to make a little announcement here, is that at the trailer, you can buy the book for $15. If you buy it, the print book on Amazon, it's much more expensive. So the trailer actually sells it at cost plus 2.5% for donation back to the California Central Coast State Parks Association.
But the ebook on Amazon, which has all these cool video links, is only
$6.99.
Yeah. And you can hardly buy anything on Amazon anymore for $6.99, as I discovered buying books there recently. I think, whoa, the price has really gone up, but ours hasn't. So it's really a bargain. And one of the things that I love about having the book now, having been a talker and rover, as we call our different names for our docent jobs at the Grove, the number of times I have had to answer the same questions and clear up the same misconceptions that people have about monarch butterflies, it's just great to be able to say, hey, you know, we've got all of this information summarized in a really interesting way, because we can't, at any one time that you're talking with the public, you can't possibly think of all the things that that they have in their heads that are wrong about monarchs. And when you hear parents telling little children stories about monarchs that are just absolutely wrong, you think, wait, you know, there's, you know, we sell children's books at the trailer, and that's great, and hopefully that clears up some of those misconceptions for children to know. But in terms of the adults who do know about the life cycle of the monarch, yet they still think when the monarchs leave the Pismo Grove, they must all be going to Mexico. Well, no, that's wrong. And we try to explain to them in our book what, you know, what the correct story is. So it's really, really fun to be able to produce this document and have our wonderful tech expert, Susan, who she's the one that really said, look, let's not just redo the book. We need to make it more up to date and a document that will go on and can easily be updated. So that's what we've done. That was our pandemic project, of course, you have to say, because during the pandemic, we were not allowed to be at the Grove and give our talks. We were replaced with QR codes, people, the docents. So if you went to the Butterfly Grove, you had your, you know, you had your iPhone and you could listen to some recording, but it's really not the same. I don't think it's the same as having docents there to actually talk to.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought the QR codes, I had never seen a QR code in a book before, and I thought that was such a great touch. They should never seen one of these in a college textbook, and that would be so helpful. Yeah, I thought that was really a great idea.
Thank you. That means a lot coming from somebody as young as you.
Yes, I've been told before a couple of years ago, QR codes are going away. So I'm glad to see they're still here and that people are still using them.
I think everybody's using them now because with the pandemic, you had to use them instead of having a menu.
Right.
Over the place. All right. Well, this has been a great conversation. Thank you all for joining me. Remind the listeners, get your copy of Pismo Monarch Butterflies, Magic Myths and Mysteries. Get it at either the trailer at the Monarch Butterfly Grove out in Pismo or on Amazon. And yeah, thank you all for joining us. Until next time, this has been Waves
and
Waters.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for having us.
Glad we finally got together on this.
Yeah. Thank you all.